The funeral of President George H.W. Bush will be tomorrow. And at the beginning of our program tomorrow, we will be speaking with Scott McLean, who is a Quinnipiac professor, and he'll be sharing with us his thoughts about the president and the president's Connecticut roots. And then right after that, 22-year-old Will Haska will be joining us. He recently was elected to Connecticut's State Senate, 22 years old. He'll be coming in with some of his younger supporters and friends of his, and they'll be talking about what it is that they want Connecticut to become and how they want Connecticut to get there. And so that's tomorrow on The Full Story. I do hope that you join us. We were just talking with William Tong. He is going to be taking control of the Attorney General's office in Connecticut within just a few weeks from now. There are some other people who are very interested in what they would like the legislature to accomplish in the next session, subjects they would like them to concentrate on. David McGuire is the executive director of the Connecticut ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, and he joins us today on the phone. David, good afternoon. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me, Ron.
It's a pleasure. William Tong was just here. We covered a number of different topics. What is it that the ACLU would like the legislature to concentrate on?
Oh, we have a long laundry list of things we'd like the legislature to tackle, but the overarching theme is that Connecticut needs to be tip of the spear in terms of protecting the public from inequality and inequities in our state. And the main area we're going to be focusing this session is the area of criminal justice reform.
And William Tong and I were just talking also about data privacy, which I know is something very important to you besides criminal justice reform.
Absolutely. I mean, we have pushed for years now at the legislature to curb mass surveillance. You know, we live in a 21st century state where there is a real pressure from police to adopt these wide sweeping technologies. You've seen it with license plate readers, and some cities are now taking on these $100,000 drones. We will push for some safeguards to make sure people's Fourth Amendment rights, which William alluded to, are not violated. We will also be standing up against tolls unless there are clear safeguards to prevent them from being a way to snoop on drivers.
Give me an example. How do you stop that snooping?
Well, you know, we're in a very unique position here in Connecticut in that we're creating a toll system from scratch, and that presents an opportunity to do it in a way that allows us to collect revenue without creating a digital dossier in every driver. The proposal just came out last month called for gantries every 6 miles, and that's a lot of data points as you drive around the state to, say, your place of worship or your parole officer's office or your school, and the police and state will be able to very quickly assemble where you've been. We want there to be very, very tight safeguards. They can't sell the data to corporations. They can only use it and hold it for a very short amount of time to build a person.
Years ago, this is going back into the 90s, I remember reading that comment from Scott McNeely, who was the head, I think he was the head of Sun Microsystems at that time. And his famous quote was something along the lines of, there is no more privacy. Is that our future? What he said so many years ago, 20, 25 years ago, is it true today?
Well, you know, privacy is one of the rare constitutional rights that hinges on what the reasonable person's expectation is. So as our public gives up more privacy rights or is more okay with the government being able to surveil them, we lose that right. But the good news is that when you tell people about the toll surveillance, for example, or the idea of drones flying around their neighborhood indiscriminately videotaping them, they don't like it. So I do believe that we're going to get our arms around it. We can't play catch up. You know, technology is advancing at a really lightning pace. I mean, a lot of these technologies are in their infancy, pretty much where computers were in the 1980s. So we need to get our arms around this quickly. And I do think our legislature will take to the challenge.
Is this a difference, how we approach this? Is this a difference in how old you are? Because I think of some older people that I know, let's not say too old, but let's say people 50s and their 60s, and who get very upset about this. But then I talk with members of the younger generation who just simply seem to accept it. It's a way of life for them. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, I do think there's some generational divide. But when you explain to young people what the ramifications of this data collection can be, they change their mind quickly. I mean, these technologies can be an on-ramp to our criminal justice system. Just as I mentioned, I mean, these are going to capture lots and lots of data points I mean, for example, a couple of years ago, our legislature tackled the unconstitutional warrantless surveillance of someone's cell phone and cell phone data. And it took a couple of years, but once legislators understood that police could buy a device and track you by your cell phone without even contacting a court or your cell phone company, they put safeguards in place to prevent that. So I do think there is a natural hesitance amongst older folks because they know a time when this wasn't the case. But when young people hear about it, they're also upset and want change.
Tell me about your criminal justice reform efforts.
Sure. So we have a campaign called the Campaign for Smart Justice, and we have a handful of people working with us, some of which were directly impacted by our criminal justice system here. And we're working together to eliminate racial disparities and mass incarceration and improve the public's confidence in the criminal justice system. We're doing so through a model of trying to, you know, get rid of collateral consequences, allow people to transition back into society, which is best for everyone's safety and also the economics of our state. The DOC budget is hundreds of millions of dollars, and people are not able to be functioning members of society. We're also trying to get our arms around the very, very real and terrible racial disparities in our Connecticut prisons. Our Connecticut prisons are roughly 70% black and brown people, which is not representative of our state. So we're going to be working with prosecutors on data transparency efforts to try to get at some of these issues, understand where our bias lies, and counter that. And in the same vein, lower prison populations, save money, and treat people fairly.
Do you feel a change in the air now that the Democrats have what I call the trifecta in Hartford, that they basically are running everything? And do you feel emboldened at this point?
Well, I think that the legislature gets that there's a very, very clear message from voters. The message is that they want change, they want equality, they want fairness, and they want the legislature to help people. So I do think they'll come in. I hope that the Democrats have a very strong, well-defined agenda. I do hope that some of our issues like immigrants' rights and criminal justice reform are part of that agenda. But I do think there's a sense of opportunity. But it's going to be very important, like William Tong mentioned, that the Democrats don't just do their thing, that they work with their Republican colleagues and really push forward. All the topics we just talked about, surveillance and criminal justice reform, are topics that there is a lot of common ground and agreement between Dems and Republicans. So some of this stuff should go on consent and go very easily if we make the right arguments and have the right people in the building.
Immigration rights, obviously, is a hot topic nowadays, especially with what is happening at the U.S.-Mexico border. How much of a problem is it in Connecticut? And to be frank, I don't see it reported possibly as much as I think that it should be. People aren't talking about it enough.
Yeah, you're onto it, Ron. I mean, most people are focusing on the New Mexico, Texas, Arizona border, but we have our own very serious issues. So we have an immigration court, federal immigration court in Hartford, and a Harper Current article a couple of months ago outlined that the bond rates about how high your bond is set is the highest in that court of any immigration court in the country. We also know that there are about 200 kids that are going through removal proceedings in the Hartford court right now that don't have a lawyer. So we're going to push with some allies in the immigrants' rights community and legal services for a bill that would create a legal right to counsel in immigration proceedings where someone either can't afford it or it's a child. I mean, there are kids as low as 5 years old, Ron, that are before the immigration court in Hartford without a lawyer. I mean, that's just not fair. So we will hopefully be shining a light on it, and I'm glad that you brought that up because it's an issue that is not covered enough here in Connecticut.
You and I are having a nice conversation right now, and we don't really have any. We have some things that we can and can't do unless we want to get thrown off the air. There are certain words we can't use on the air. But in the meantime, free speech always seems to be in the news nowadays about fake news and what should be reported. Again, I know that's something that interests you personally, even away from the American Civil Liberties Union.
Right. No, I mean, the free speech is what makes our society different than other places. People are able to express their ideals. And, you know, we're going to tackle some things this year that deal with that. We're always very, very protective of the media's rights to report freely. So you have an ally in the ACLU there. But we're also working really hard on freedom of information issues. I mean, a press cannot really do their job and be that fourth branch of government without access to data. And we've seen some real big problems in Connecticut where entities, agencies, whether they be police departments or state agencies, are really running the clock out on these requests, and they the commission themselves are underfunded. So we're going to try to work on some of those issues. Those issues are crucial to us doing the work we need to do on all the issues we just talked about. If we don't have the data and understand what the government's doing, then we're not going to be able to reform it.
Do you feel that these agencies are emboldened nowadays because of what is happening in Washington?
You know, I don't know how to really connect the dots on that. I mean, there has been some real difficulties with some press access pieces around police accountability, for example. I mean, there are some systems of government, prosecutors and police being one of them, that are really used to being in control and not used to being scrutinized. So there's a natural resistance and sometimes a real shying away from data and transparency. I mean, we're trying to create a system where it's data-driven and there's real stats that we could all look at and agree upon. Is racial profiling real? I mean, that's the best example. We as a state are a leader on that, and we've shown undeniably that racial bias does exist in policing here. And now a handful of police departments have really taken it on and are trying to get to the bottom of it. We would not have gotten there without the data and the open mind between the public, the press, and the agencies in this case.
If I could just stick with the media for just one more question. I know there has been talk in the last few days about media consolidation here in Connecticut. Does that worry you in terms of free speech? Do you think free speech may not be curtailed, but in the meantime, there won't be as much openness?
Well, I mean, I think you always want to have ample outlets for people to get their voices out there and express themselves in a free way. So there is always a danger of media consolidation because you could have one person or entity kind of controlling that spigot. But at the same time, you know, I was on a board for a local access TV station. That's also a really important way for people to get their voices out and something that the Trump administration is trying to take a bite out of through defunding. So, you know, we as a society need to remain vigilant and stand by our principles of free speech and open and a really open society. So all the things you raise are very real concerns.
David McGuire is the executive director of Connecticut's ACLU. David, next week, Nadine Strossen is coming into our program. Nadine is the former president of the National ACLU. One of the topics that we'll be talking about is how the ACLU seems to get some people so riled up. When people have certain rights that they feel being violated, they like the ACLU a lot. They like you guys a lot. And then at other times, man, oh man, do they hate you. Does that drive you crazy?
It does. But at the same time, I think that shows that I work for an organization that's very principled. You know, we represent clients sometimes we don't like personally and we don't agree with their form of opinion on something, but we represent them because their constitutional rights have been violated in one way or another. So it's kind of a feather in our cap, but it also is something that I have to explain to a lot of people when I first meet them why we do that.
Give me an example, please.
Well, I mean, I've represented a bunch of folks over my career that I didn't necessarily agree with. And, you know, sometimes I have emboldened speech that I didn't agree with also. So, I mean, I've advocated for people that are, you know, just hold beliefs that I don't hold. So anti-LGBT folks, for example. And, you know, we've represented, for example, the Archdiocese, who was going to the legislature to advocate on an anti-gay marriage, you know, proposal. And although we were staunch proponents of the gay marriage bill, we had to represent them and make clear they wanted to make every single congregant register as a lobbyist, which was crazy and was going to stifle free speech. So that was one where we represented someone on free speech grounds that realistically, I did not want their message to get out there loudly, but we knew that they had a right to do it.
Just to clarify, is this because you're going for a strict interpretation of the Constitution?
No, it's because in many cases, the most vulnerable or the least liked opinions are the ones that are going to be squelched first. So it's not that we're, you know, we relish doing that. And it's not that we're purists. I mean, there is a balance to be met. Hate speech, of course, is not constitutionally protected. But speech you don't agree with politically, most of the time is.
William Tong was discussing about how he is linking arms with fellow AGs from around the country. Are there any issues that you are working with other ACLUs from New York or Pennsylvania or California, wherever? Are you talking with them about certain topics that you would like covered?
We certainly are, and we're actually actively working with the Massachusetts ACLU on an immigrant protection project. So the way that we know there are such problems in the federal immigration court in Hartford is through a court watching program where we have volunteers that are trained in the courthouse every Wednesday, keeping notes and documenting when someone needs help. We work with the bail fund in New Haven and try to get people the assistance to get out. So we definitely do collaborate. I mean, I'm very blessed to be the executive director here in Connecticut, where we have lots of opportunity to lead the way for the rest of the country. We can start conversations and pass laws that wouldn't even be dreamed about in certain states, even neighboring states. We're very lucky here to have a state that has really embraced equality and freedom.
Can we do a little inside baseball stuff here? How many lawyers do you have in your office, and where do you get your funding from?
Yeah, great question. So we have one litigator and two other lawyers. I'm a recovering lawyer myself. We're hiring a staff attorney right now. So we're trying to grow. We have two organizations. We have a 501c3, which is our legal department. That's tax-deductible donation. Then we have a membership organization, our union, which is where our lobbying comes out of. We have been very fortunate to gain a lot of members after the election of Donald Trump. The good news is that even though I think a lot of the shock of what he's doing has worn off, people have stood with us because they see the power of the ACLU in the state of Connecticut and how much we can be a force for change and a beacon for hope. So that's a great question. Thanks, Ron.
If you had the chance to talk with Ned Lamont as he becomes governor in just a few weeks from now, what's the first thing you would ask him for?
So we, on the campaign trail, did a great issue advocacy campaign on smart justice principles around ending mass incarceration. And we were actually present at every single gubernatorial debate, and Ned had several interactions with our folks. We're pushing Ned hard on criminal justice reform, and the good news is that he's shown some receptivity to it. I think this is the ultimate issue of fairness and economic progress here in the state. We can save money, get people working, and treat everyone fairly. So I hope that Ned will embrace that fully.
David, if someone wants to get in contact with the Connecticut ACLU, find out more information, or even need possible legal help, how do they do that?
All that is available at ACLUCT.org. And if they're interested in the smart justice work that we're really focusing on, that's ACLUCT.org/GoSmartJustice.
David McGuire is the executive director of the Connecticut ACLU. David, thank you very much for coming on with us today. And I hope that after the holidays, you can possibly come into our studios and we could have a nice hour-long conversation.
That'd be great. I appreciate it. Have a great holiday, Ron.
Thank you, David. Same to you. I appreciate your time. It was David McGuire, executive director of the Connecticut ACLU. And before that, you were listening to William Tong, who is Connecticut's attorney general elect. Tomorrow on our program, as I mentioned before, it is the funeral of the late President George Bush. And we'll be speaking with Scott McLean, who is professor from Quinnipiac, and he'll be giving us his memories. And right after that, we'll be talking with our soon-to-be new 22-year-old state senator from Connecticut, Will Haskell. I want to thank you for listening today. That's our show. Julie Ferdino is our engineer. Our associate producers, Christian Carter, Sabrina Garone, Natalie Chafari. Carrie Frank is digital editor. Ann Lopez is the producer. Terry Sheridan, our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to all of you for being part of The Full Story.